This is Bryn McCauley, and you are listening to The Medley with Blake Crash Priddle.
Hey everyone, Blake Crash Priddle here again, and welcome to The Medley. This week we have another double feature for you. What makes our two guests special is that they were both actors on the 1990s animated series Caillou. First up, we're going to speak with Bryn McCauley. She's been acting ever since she was a little kid, and in this interview, you'll get to learn about her parallel career. Our next guest is going to be Pat Fry, an actor that originally started off in radio. He's going to tell us all about how he made the jump from the radio industry to the voiceover industry, and how he landed his most notable role, Boris, in Caillou. Tell us all about how your amazing career began.
My grandmother was a writer. She wrote for preschool animation, and I went with her to drop off a script at an agency when I was 4 years old, and people still brought physical scripts to places. I was very precocious, and I jumped onto the agent's lap, and the agent asked if I wanted to go to an audition, and I said yes, and that's how I started.
Did you take any courses at all?
When I was a kid, I did not take any courses. When I grew up, I stopped working, and then I went to theater school in New York City and took a lot of courses, and I still find studying to be absolutely essential to me today, so I always stay in class.
So your first voiceover role was Caillou, right?
That is right. I was 7 years old and went to Montreal to audition. I lived in Ottawa at the time. And I was called in to audition for Rosie, Caillou's little sister. And I did that audition, and then they said, hey, can you read this role too, the lead boy, Caillou? And I did that. And then I was told that they were leaning towards a boy. And then they decided to hire a girl, because boys and girls kind of sound similar at that age.
Did you have to do anything to prepare to do the voice of a four-year-old boy?
I think it just in my little kid brain, I was like, this is what a kid sounds like, and tried to sound a little bit younger than myself at the time.
Can you still do the Caillou voice, or did it fade over the years?
I cannot do the Caillou voice anymore in a way that I think is like presentable. When I try to do it now, it sounds really cringy.
I do know that when Caillou first premiered, he received a lot of negative criticism. Was it tough to deal with that kind of criticism?
I mean, I understand it. He is a whiny character, but I think he's also a realistic four-year-old. So I think that's why kids love the show, because they feel seen. And I think it's why parents and other people struggle with it, because he can be definitely... annoying. But how do I feel about it? I mean, there's an old saying that there's no such thing as bad press, and it's like Caillou gets a lot of attention. That show is extremely well known, and whether people are saying good things or bad things, it's just all part of the energy around him. It's not a bad thing.
When I was a kid, I thought it was funny seeing a four-year-old boy completely bald. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I liked that. I thought that was funny. It's apparently because when they created him originally, he was a baby. So when they rewrote him as a four-year-old, they left him bald so that they would recognize him.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
Another role that you played was the title character in Anne of Green Gables, the animated series. Did you read the books before you got cast for that role?
I did read the books. And I definitely also watched the on-camera show that was with Megan Follows before I auditioned.
So how did it feel to be a part of Anne of Green Gables, the animated series, since you heard the stories before and saw the original series with Megan Follows?
It was such a joy. I was elated, and the cast was so much fun to work with. This was when we still recorded everything all together in person, and it was really, really fun.
Do you have a favorite episode of Caillou or Anne of Green Gables?
I don't have a favorite episode. I think I more so have favorite experiences about when we were recording. When I was little, we got trapped in a snowstorm in Montreal, and couldn't drive home to Ottawa, and we had to stay in a hotel that didn't have heat, and we slept in our winter jackets. That was very memorable. And when we were recording Anne of Green Gables, we used to lick gummy bears and throw them at the studio window and just, it's very silly, just watch them sort of fall down the window pane over the day.
The one episode that I recall of Anne of Green Gables was the one where she found a puppy in their shed and they had to try to find its owner. That's the one that I remember from my childhood.
That's very sweet. That sounds like every kid's kind of dream, like, oh, I want to find a puppy and save it.
Yes, and Anne taught the puppy how to fetch slippers, which I don't think was in the original book.
Yeah, that animated Anne was very inventive. She had a lot of wild ideas.
Another voice that you did was Franklin's baby sister, Harriet.
Yes.
What did you have to do to prepare for doing the voice of a little girl turtle?
That one, I think I was maybe 15 or 13 when I recorded that voice. Yeah, that one was more studying what little four-year-olds sound like and just trying to emulate their innocence. And the giggle was such a big part of Harriet's character because she didn't talk very much because she was so little, but she definitely giggled a lot.
Is that a voice that you can still do since you did that later in your career?
You're silly, Flinkin. I think she sounds kind of like that.
That is so cute. That's very nice.
Thanks.
I previously interviewed Elizabeth Saunders, who did the voice of Mrs. Turtle, and she told me some interesting behind-the-scenes stories. Did the two of you record your lines together, or did you meet at all?
I don't remember meeting her. I think I mostly did Harriet by myself. I did maybe work once or twice with Noah Reed, who played Franklin. Mostly I was alone on that show.
Yeah, Liz told me some interesting stories about Noah as well, and that they recorded together, I guess, earlier on when the show first started.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah, as a family unit, I think that makes sense. And Harriet was, because she's so young, she's not as essential to, like, the action of the story. So I think maybe that's why I wasn't always in with them.
Is there an episode of Franklin that you remember with Harriet that you enjoyed?
No, but I would love to hear if there's one for you.
There was one where Franklin decided to give Harriet his drum, and then she got carried away with it and refused to give it back. And much to Franklin's annoyance, he wanted to play the recorder that she was playing, but it was all full of cookie crumbs because she was eating a cookie earlier.
Now that you say that, Blake, I'm really also remembering this episode and the cookie crumbs specifically. Just such a kid move to fill a recorder with cookie crumbs. And
now, you did a handful of other voices throughout the years. You did a few characters in one of the Total Drama installations. I'm not overly familiar with Total Drama, but so who were those characters?
I played Amy and Sammy on Total Drama in season 5, Pakatu Island. They are twin cheerleaders born 17 minutes apart. And Amy is the older one. And the other one's actually named Sammy, but everyone calls her Sammy because she's similar to her twin sister.
Yeah, it's too bad that they weren't in Total Drama-rama. I started watching that after a friend of mine told me that she was animating that particular show, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Those writers are brilliant.
Tell us about some of the other characters that you voiced.
I played Mavis on Hotel Transylvania, the series. I love her. I love playing her. She also is a leader and has really big ideas, similar to Anne Shirley. And she just really wants to be treated like an adult and to have the freedom to run the hotel the way that she wants to. Because in the series, her dad is away at the Vampire Council, and she's kind of in this contest with her aunt Lydia over who gets to run the show at the hotel. I loved playing Mavis, and I loved playing Lainey. Lainey Penn in GarageBand was one of my favorite shows I've ever done because the writing was just so good and the music was really strong. And Lainey was just like such a wonderful character because she was so well-intentioned and was also in love with her best friend. And that was a fun and heartbreaking role to play.
You did a few live action roles as well as voice roles. Can you tell us about some of those and which one of that was your favorite?
Yes, I have mostly done guest roles on some Canadian TV series. I really liked being on Saving Hope, which is a medical drama, because I got to work with Peter Callahan, who is a Canadian icon. It was just wonderful to work with him because he's such a generous and talented actor, and I really loved the director too, David Wellington.
What sort of things do you do when you're not acting, since I know that there are a lot of Canadian actors out there that sometimes have to be flexible when it comes to finding work?
For sure, yeah. I have kind of jumped around between two worlds. I'm very passionate about global affairs and refugee issues, so I actually worked in a refugee law firm. I worked at a human rights NGO in South Africa. I sometimes feel torn between those two worlds because I'm very interested in justice and specifically refugee issues. So that's where I have split my time and interests.
What are some of the projects that you're currently working on?
It's so hard to talk about that because they are all very NDA'd, which is called a non-disclosure agreement, which means you're not allowed to talk about them. So three of the shows I'm on, I'm not allowed to talk about. But one of them I can talk about. It's called Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, and it is has been out. This is our seventh season. It's an Emmy Award winning preschool kids show on PBS. And I play baby Margaret. Another baby. But she's actually baby. She's like, she's a baby. She's 18 months old, I think. She's Daniel's little sister.
One thing that I like about Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is they introduced an autistic character.
Oh, cool.
I wish I could remember his name. He's Teacher Harriet's nephew. They did a really good job portraying autism in the episode. I didn't watch the whole thing, just a clip of it on YouTube. But it's very nice to see that kind of representation in the media, being on the autism spectrum myself.
I totally support and back what you're saying and completely agree. I think Daniel Tiger does such a great job of representing the world as it exists. And that's just one great example.
What tips would you give to people that are interested in getting into voice acting or acting?
I would definitely say to take classes. I think people sometimes understand being an actor or voice actor as a hobby. And it's fine for it to be a hobby, but I think it takes a lot of dedication and hard work, and it's a career just like any other career. So watch a lot of cartoons, practice your, like, the range of voices that you can do, and I think, like, never underestimate the degree to which being a voice actor is an acting gig, and you need to understand sort of fundamental principles of acting. Any new character, you're kind of getting to know them as you are working. So I play Maylin on a show called Super Wish. That's on YTV. And she was a recast, meaning they had another actress playing her. And then I came in later on. And it took me a while to understand her energy because she's a leader and she's always telling people what to do. But she does it in a very genuine way and not in like an authoritative way or a demeaning way. But she's also a warrior, so she's extremely strong. And it took me a while to like find the balance of, okay, this girl's really bossy, but she's not condescending or demeaning.
Have you ever written down any ideas for your own animated shows?
I have not. I have so many amazing friends who have created their own cartoons. And my mom has actually created a number of cartoons. One is called The Pumps, and it's about two brothers who run a gas station, which sounds very simple, but it's actually quite funny. Short answer, no, I don't have my own cartoon idea. I just get really lucky that I get to be part of other people's ideas.
If you could do a voice on any other animated series, which one would it be?
It would have been amazing to be on Rugrats. I think the voices on that show are some of the most iconic cartoon voices of all time. Or Powerpuff Girls. It's a lot of the same cast. Those classic cartoons, Rugrats, Dexter's Lab.
Well, it was awesome to have you on the show, and thank you so very much for your time. Before we go, is there a way that fans can follow you on social media or get in touch with you?
Yes, for sure. You can follow me on Instagram at Bryn, Bryn underscore McMuffin, McMuffin.
And that was Bryn McCauley and her story about her awesome career. Next up, former radio personality and actor Pat Fry. As always, it's nice to have you on the show, Pat, and thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. I grew up watching Caillou, so this is a very this is going to be a very interesting interview. I think I'm going to enjoy it big time.
Well, I hope so. Caillou is very kind to me. He was my third son. I have two other real life flesh and blood ones, and I like to say that two of my sons cost me money, and the third one made me money.
That is the perfect comparison. I love it. Well, before you became Boris, also known as Caillou's daddy, you were in the radio business, and I believe you still are. Was that a career that you always wanted to pursue?
Yeah, I guess you could say from when I was, I guess, about 8 years old is when the Beatles appeared on the scene, and I began to listen to the radio, to listen to all the Beatles songs, and of course, they played other songs, so you start to listen to those too, and then you start to realize there's a guy who's introducing the songs, and he would be usually pretty witty and clever and funny. So I kind of grew up with the idea that that might be a fun thing to do, seeing as how I was not a good singer, and I did not anticipate being in a band. And somehow playing records was a lot of fun, and so I got into radio right out of high school. It was just the first job that I had after I got out of high school. I did 2 months of internship that was not paid and then began to work myself up the ladder. But, you know, I got out of radio, more than 30 years ago. So I haven't actually been in radio since about 1988 officially, although a lot of the radio commercials that I've done voiceover for have been on the radio, so I'm still there. But ultimately, I can't say that I'm still in radio any longer officially. When I think back to my radio days, there were radio announcers, and I'm sure they're still that way today, who used to have the headset on, and they would crank them really, really loud. And I never understood that because it gave me an artificial idea of what you sound like, and that wasn't for me. That's why I got out of radio. I just couldn't do the phony stuff, you know, the whole CJSS radio coming at you, we're playing all the hot wax stacks and stacks, you know, that sort of thing. I could do it, but I didn't like to. It just seemed so weird.
It does seem weird, but nowadays, radio is much different. You're not expected to sound like a jock anymore. That makes a lot of things easier.
Yeah, and of course, I'm considered too old. So, you know, my time is past. To go back and get into it now could be very difficult. I went off the air in about 1984 and became a creative director because my strength was in commercials, writing and producing and voicing commercials. And that was what I enjoyed doing. So I became a creative director and I went off the air then. I've stayed in the production business, as a voice talent and a producer and writer as well over the years. And of course, Caillou's dad was a nice bonus.
Tell us all about how you got that role of Caillou's daddy, also known as Boris.
My son, AJ, was a regular voice in the TV series, the cartoon series Arthur. When it was first created, he was one of the terrible Tibble twins. And he was also the crybaby Alvin in the cartoon series Little Lulu. So I would drive him from where we lived at the time was Ottawa. They were recording the series in Montreal at Cinar Studios. So I would drive him there. He was perhaps 9 or 10 years old. I would pester the talent coordinator, a man named Andy Grin, a lovely fellow, about letting me have an audition. I would, you know, told him I had been in radio and I did voices for commercials. And what he said was they had a standing policy that parents could not audition. So I found out that Andy had a collection of radio station and television station coffee mugs. So, and I had a large collection from all of the various stations, including TV stations that I'd worked in across Canada. And so each time I brought AJ to record, I would bring a mug and give it to Andy. And about the fourth time that I brought him a mug, I dropped in my audio cassette demo of my voiceover. And he looked in the mug and he saw it and he kind of rolled his eyes and said, I'll see what I can do. And he did. He got me an audition for this new cartoon series that was coming up called Caillou. And so I auditioned against 35 other guys, and I was fortunate enough to be chosen. And it was a great thing because I was in, I think they tell me, about 250 episodes.
I assume that you just used your normal speaking voice, correct?
Yeah, with a bit more excitement. I kind of elevate my energy level. And I'll do my best. Hey, Caillou, Blake is interviewing me for his blog show today. I elevate the energy level, but the other thing that I try to bring to Boris is an innocence and a positive nature.
There was an episode of Caillou that I remember where he and his dad buried a dead bird, and Caillou asked, "Why did it die?" And Dad said, "Maybe it got too old." And then later on in the episode, I recall Dad was having trouble reading the newspaper. And he says, "I can't see the words on here. I think I'm getting too old." And when that happened, poor Caillou thought that his dad was going to die soon. I remember that one from when I was a kid. You remember that one?
Yes, I do. I do. And it's ironic you bring that up because I actually was in my booth doing some narration yesterday. And I have never had to wear glasses since I had laser eye surgery in the middle 90s for a television commercial. So I didn't even have to pay for it. But so they gave me the laser eye surgery in 1997. And I haven't had to use glasses since. But yesterday, for the first time, I was realizing, you know what, maybe I better start thinking about glasses again. Hopefully I have a little longer, though, than the bird did.
Is there a favorite episode of Caillou that you'd like to tell us about?
I have. There's many of them which were good fun, but I have to say that my absolute favorite was the one where Caillou and Dad, and I think maybe Rosie and Mom all went to, this is a place where you, the name of it escapes me, but it's a place where you can go in and you can see the stars above in the ceiling and like an astrolab or an astro, again,
planetarium.
I can't remember the name of a planetarium. That's the one. So Caillou and Dad and the family go to the planetarium and they're guided around the planetarium by a character who the voice was performed by my son, AJ. So that I've always remembered that was a career highlight. Was that he and I were working on the same cartoon together at the same time. Now, the fact is that I had performed a few times in Arthur. I guess I can reveal this now after all these years, but when nobody was looking and they needed a little background voice or something like that to come in when they were recording Arthur, Andy would come out and he'd steal me to come in and he'd throw me in the booth and he'd say, you know, can you make yourself sound like a play-by-play guy? There's a hockey game on the TV in the background. So I'd go in the booth and I'd do something like, he's got the puck, he's coming across the blue line, Wiseup shoots, scores! And then they'd use that in the Arthur episode, or it might have been just like a bank manager murmuring in the background, and you know, you don't really understand any words. They call that Walla. And so I did appear unnamed or uncredited in Arthur a few times. That was, generally speaking, not supposed to be done, but I'm sure I wasn't the first and definitely not the last to be stuck in the booth just for a moment or so. But that was sort of fun too. But, you know, with AJ, my own son, to be working together, that was very cool.
Were there any other characters that you voiced in other cartoons or video games?
Now, when Toys R Us made a game back in the 90s, it was called Jeffrey Goes to the Fair. And a friend of mine who I had done other voiceover work for of a more business nature, he designed and created the game with his partner. It was Dave Stevenson and Warren Pratt. And they have a company called Aptastic. And one of their clients was Toys R Us. So Toys R Us was looking for a computer game that for kids. These guys designed it. Dave would sing, and he played the main character of Jeffrey the Giraffe. And I played several parts on that particular video game, as did AJ. And my other son, Mickey, was also in that game. And one of my nieces also performed on that game, too. There's another game called Gothos, which came out in the 90s, and it's very dark, has to do with vampirism. And it was not a big successful game, but I did the main voice of the vampire in that one. It was affected using a vocoder type of technology, so you wouldn't recognize my voice at all. But I had done that one. And I've done other smaller parts. I've contributed a few, little soldier lines that you come into the studio. You might say something like, he's over there behind the bush, that sort of thing. So I've done that sort of thing. I've done all kinds of different voice work over the years. I've been doing freelance voice work now for over 30 years. So it's hard to remember them all.
What's the biggest piece of advice that you'd give to someone that wants to pursue a voice acting career, like the one that you've developed?
Well, the advice would vary based upon their level of experience and talent. A beginner, you would say, try to read aloud as much as possible, absolutely anything that you can read. If you have a little bit more talent than that, then it would be to try to audition as often as you can. And of course, if you become even more experienced than that, it would be to market yourself or get an agent. But one piece of advice that was given to me by someone who was not in the voiceover business at all was, if you can get it, get your own name with a .com. Because as this person explained to me, .com is the main street of business on the internet. So if you want to market yourself and have a top location, get yourname.com. So I immediately bought patfry.com. AJ has ajfry.com. A number of people that I work with took the same advice and have done the same thing. So there are three bits of advice there, or maybe four, that I've given you. Put on the hat that fits.
Are you going to be doing any more movies or any more animation in the future?
Well, obviously, since those kinds of jobs are competitive, one can never say for sure, but I haven't discounted it. Now, where I live now is not particularly conducive to that sort of thing. I have had a couple of jobs in Toronto. When I lived in Ottawa, there was a lot of production going on, but about 7 years ago, we moved to Niagara Falls to be closer to Toronto where AJ was, and he had just gotten married. And we just hoped we'd be a little closer to the grandchildren, if there would ever be grandchildren. No pressure. It's a little bit more difficult to get into Toronto. At first, I got an agent, and I was auditioning, and I got a couple of gigs. But the travel and the traffic, it wasn't the distance. It was the volume of traffic and the time that you would spend. So I basically said, you know what, I don't really need this. So I got out of it. But I've been getting the itch lately rethinking that. And I've recently written a book, and it hasn't been published or anything, but it's gotten a great deal of interest to the point where we're awaiting the final documentation for an agreement for the book to be marketed for a film or a TV series or an animation. There's no guarantee that anything will come of that, but it could motivate me to do some more of the actual on-camera stuff.
Well, Pat, it was awesome to hear all about your successful career, and thank you very much for sharing those stories with us, and thank you very much for joining us on The Medley.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Blake. It's great talking to you. You're a great journalist.
Why, thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this week's double feature featuring Bryn McCauley and Pat Fry, two very talented Canadian actors. Well, that's our show for this week, and remember, here at The Medley, we're all kinds of different.